Introduction by Jacqueline Woodson. The first time I met the Logan family, I was 13, and although I lived in Brooklyn, New York, I had spent many years in the South. In Cassie Logan, I found a kindred spirit. My brother's name was Hope. Her brother's name was Stacy. We both had known loving grandmothers and nights spent with our families on front porch stairs. We knew the heat of the South, its unjust laws, its deep history, its beauty. To pick up a book and find so much of myself on the pages was amazing. But more than that, Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry helped me understand the story of so many people's lives over the years. Because what child has not wanted to know the love and laughter of family? What child has not wanted to get back at a bully the way Cassie Logan finally gets back at Lillian Jean Sims? What child hasn't, deep in their own hearts, thought about freedom and justice? So I read this book, and then I read it again, and then another time. By the time I was an adult, I had read Roll of Thunder, Hear My Cry more than a dozen times, curling up inside the story of this amazing family, rooting for them, and hoping, each time, that everyone turns out all right. Mildred D. Taylor never let me down. As a child, I dreamed of becoming a writer. I know that I am a writer because Miss Taylor wrote this book, and I saw myself inside the pages of it, the way so many thousands of readers have since seen themselves in the pages. Mildred D. Taylor pointed me toward my own stories. Cassie Logan gave me the strength to write them. What reader, what writer, could ask for anything more?
Chapter 1. Little man, would you come on? You keep it up and you're going to make us late. My youngest brother paid no attention to me. Grasping more firmly his newspaper-wrapped notebook and his tin can lunch of cornbread and oil sausages, he continued to concentrate on the dusty road. He lagged several feet behind my other brothers, Stacy and Christopher John, and me, attempting to keep the rusty Mississippi dust from swelling with each step and drifting back upon his shiny black shoes and the cuffs of his corduroy pants by lifting each foot high before setting it gently down again. Always meticulously neat, 6-year-old little man never allowed dirt or tears or stains to mar anything he owned. Today was no exception. "You keep it up and make us late for school, Mama's gonna wear you out," I threatened, pulling with exasperation at the high collar of the Sunday dress Mama had made me wear for the first day of school, as if that event were something special. It seemed to me that showing up at school at all on a bright August-like October morning made for running the cool forest trails and wading barefoot in the forest pond was concession enough. Sunday clothing was asking too much. Christopher John and Stacy were not too pleased about the clothing or school either. Only little man, just beginning his school career, found the prospects of both intriguing.
"Y'all go ahead and get dirty if y'all wanna," he replied without even looking up from his studied steps. "Me? I'm gonna stay clean."
"I bet your mama's gonna clean you, you keep it up," I grumbled. "Aw, Cassie, leave him be," Stacy admonished, frowning and kicking testily at the road.
"I ain't said nothing, but..."
Stacy cut me a wicked look, and I grew silent. His disposition had been irritatingly sour lately. If I hadn't known the cause of it, I could have forgotten very easily that he was, at 12, bigger than I, and that I had promised Mama to arrive at school looking clean and ladylike. "Shoot," I mumbled finally, unable to restrain myself from further comment. "It ain't my fault you're gonna be in Mama's class this year." Stacy's frown deepened, and he jammed his fists into his pockets but said nothing. Christopher John, walking between Stacy and me, glanced uneasily at both of us, but did not interfere. A short, round boy of 7, he took little interest in troublesome things, preferring to remain on good terms with everyone.